We are coming up now on 10 a.m., and we invite you now to stay tuned for one of WCOM's longest-running programs, Claudio's Speakeasy and Radio Theater. Claudio's show is always fresh and never rehearsed and scripted. He finds his comedy and direction intuitively and skillfully from aspects of the conversation. Join us for Claudio's Speakeasy and Radio Theater now and every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. on WCOM 103.5 FM, your community radio station. But first, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to start off with a bit of music. And this is a piece from 1956 that Claudio says he particularly likes. It's an organ piece, and it's being played on the big organ that no longer exists at Wrigley Field in Chicago. Okay, and now here's Claudio.
And that was compiled by Bob Crowley, who's also a historian. He's also the president of the Apex Arts Council. Thank you for joining us this morning, folks. And where did you find this particular archive?
Oh, I find all kinds of things everywhere. I've got more music and more strange pieces than you can shake a stick at. There's an archive, actually, out on the Internet, and I grab a lot of the stuff from there as I need it. But we have lots and lots of things that we can still do. I mean, we've got...
We're actually going to be playing more of the music that you've uncovered throughout the show. But first, I want to introduce the fact that we're going to have an author on today. He's actually going to be calling in. I think it's from England somewhere. The author's name is Richard Lieberman. He has written a book. Find the title of the book. The book is called Your Job and How Technology Will Change It, a very important thing to consider. He's going to be calling in. I'm going to read the little promo here. It may sound like an enormous leap over HAL 9000 in 2001 Space Odyssey, but the reality is, in the very near future, technology will remake every job out there. Richard Lieberman, internationally recognized employment and intellectual property expert, explains how every working person in every industry and profession will soon experience profound changes in their work as technology, social networking, and virtual communications alter the way jobs have traditionally been performed. So that's going to be our guest today, and he's going to be calling in around 10:10. In the meantime, we might play another piece of a historical perspective on music.
Okay. Any particular one of the group?
Give me those titles again.
Well, we talked about the harp music.
Yeah, that's which is actually Harpo Marx, right?
Harpo Marx doing a piece called Guardian Angel on the harp. And Harpo was not really a soloist. He played for just about all of the films of the Marx Brothers, but this is one that he is soloist on.
Harpo Marx. Thank you. And that was Harpo Marx. He was really good with that, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
I'm wondering how famous he was for that during his time.
Well, he started out that way. I mean, his mother pushed him into doing that, learning. All the boys were trained.
Everybody named him Harpo, or was that actually a comedic name?
That was a comedic name. I forget his real name, but that was what he brought on, because everybody's name in the group ended with O.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like...
So it was a nickname, Harpo.
Harpo, and Groucho was actually Julius.
Hmm.
But he was grouchy and grumpy, so he
and now he's Alan Alda.
And now he's Alan Alda, exactly. Well,
to me, that was truly the character that he drew from in MASH.
Oh yeah, I mean you can see that all the way.
Absolutely. I'm going to give a little further introduction about the author Richard Lieberman, who'll be calling in here at 10:10. Richard Lieberman is recognized as a leading employment law expert, ranked as one of the top lawyers in the international Who's Who of Business Lawyers, America's Leading Lawyers of Business Chambers USA. And the international Who's Who of Business. He regularly consults with general counsel, chief executive officers, and senior human resource executives at a number of America's largest corporations. Lieberman's last book, Personal Foul, Academy Chicago in 2001, chronicled the high-profile case of Coach Joe Moore versus the University of Notre Dame. It won the Society of Midland Authors Adult Nonfiction in 2002. The author promoted Personal Foul through a nationwide book tour and over 50 radio interviews. He currently has a large Twitter following on how technology is changing work. And he'll be on in about four minutes or so.
He should be calling in here from wherever he's calling in from.
I'm assuming it's England, but I may have that wrong.
Well, we'll see. We'll keep him going.
Our friend Peter will inform me of that at some point.
Oh, good. Well, we got a very international day here today. You know, today is the birthday of one of your landsmen, Count von Zeppelin.
Oh, von Zeppelin, yes.
Yeah, the guy who invented the rigid airship, most famous of which, of course, was the Hindenburg.
The one that blew up.
Yeah.
Yes, God, what
but, a... You know, so happy birthday, Ferdy, and have a good time, wherever
you are.
Wherever
you are. Which way did you go?
Well, I'm sure he went up. I mean, it's... He was not directly part of all the foolishness that happened after him.
No. Well, I tell you what. Why don't we go to another maybe 2-3 minute piece of music, and then we'll bring on our guest.
All right. Let me see what I've got here.
Run it by me.
I can always go with a little bit of theremin if you want.
There we go. Let's play a little bit of that. We may fade out on that. That'll be a good one. This is actually a dark piece, right? From what I understand.
Yeah, it's called Darkness actually, and I just need to get it queued up here. And
this is the theremin on which quite a few documentaries have been made.
Yeah, and of course that's also the instrument where the theme from Star Trek was played.
Right.
Yeah. So let's hear what theremin can do. Thank you.
Good morning. Is this Richard Lieberman?
It is. Good morning, Claudio.
Good morning. Where are you calling from, if I might ask?
I am calling from Wisconsin at the moment.
Wisconsin.
Door County, Wisconsin,
I
yeah.
I got you. I knew it was, for some reason, I was under the impression it was England at one time. I guess you do a bit of
travel. Well, the publisher is in England. The book publisher is based in England.
That's it. Okay. I had my wires crossed somehow.
And there's a lot of good cheese in Wisconsin, too, so that's a good reason.
Absolutely. I'm enjoying – I haven't read the book cover to cover yet, but it is certainly an education that I think anybody and everybody out there needs, especially me. So
thank you, Clyde.
My absolute pleasure, and I actually have a copy of your book that I got from Peter. I will take this in any direction you'd like. Is there a format you have by which you'd like to explain the book, or should we just go directly to the points? The first one being how technology will soon transform all jobs in every industry.
Yeah, but let's follow the points, but you can wing it, and okay. I'll wing it wherever you want it to go. I'll go with you, but the points are good ones, I think, too.
I know one of our listenerships is Chapel Hill University, so I think we can go in the educational route, which is the one I like anyway.
Sure.
So, actually. Yeah, I go ahead and launch it any way you like. I think it's a marvelous book, and I'm really glad somebody has put it out. It's especially necessary for people like myself.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Thank you, Claudio. Thank you for having me on.
Absolute pleasure. This is. Let me mention very quickly, this is Claudio's Speakeasy and Radio Theater, brought to you by Durham's Historic Carolina Theater and also the Apex Arts Council. Back to you. We have Richard Lieberman on the line. He is the author of Your Job and How Technology Will Change It.
Good morning, Claudio.
Good morning. So glad you're on. So cue us into what inspired you to write this book in the first place. Obviously, something motivated you.
Well, you know, the book is Your Job and How Technology Will Change It. And I'll tell you, I'm a middle-aged lawyer, and I was working in Chicago, and I opened an office for my firm in L.A. I started moving back and forth between the offices, and was bringing all this paper with me and files, and was worried about not being at a desk with a telephone every day so I could talk to my clients.
Right.
And I began working virtually. I began working without paper, not at a desk, and I realized my clients didn't care where I was. I didn't need the paper. And here I was, a middle-aged guy, late in my career. Suddenly I was working, you know, in a very different way. And I began thinking, gee, if this happened to me at this point, what does this mean in terms of the work world and jobs
right.
and everybody else? So I decided to do some research, and I started writing this book. First, I thought the changes would be just with lawyers and accountants. But as I got into it, I began to see it was going to be everybody. Everybody was going to start to work virtually. Didn't matter what your job was, what profession, what area. And so that is the basis of, your job and how technology will change it.
Everyone carrying a laptop certainly qualifies, and I think that's most everybody on the planet these days.
Well, that's exactly right. And one thing I saw as I got into the book was that there is a huge generation gap between young people who've grown up with technology as part of their DNA. They work this way and they don't even talk about it. And their bosses don't completely understand what they're doing. They don't use paper. They're much faster in many ways, better researchers, better able to pull together information for analysis.
In many cases, they know more than the people they work for. Yeah.
They know how to do it. And And then you've got the older generation that's kind of stuck in the old ways and not really getting the change that's going on really right under their noses.
Not really facing the fact that this late in life we actually have to make a rather extreme change.
Well, that's right. I mean, if things were not going to change, they could, you know, if the work world wasn't going to change, then everybody could keep doing what they're doing. But what's happening, Claudio, is that the development of these new super robust technologies are going to really eliminate the need for a central workplace where employees must go every day. Instead, physical files will be virtual. Your colleagues will be kind of located around the world. And bosses won't need to physically observe employees to assess their work.
They can do it more by virtue of the product, is what you're saying.
I mean,
I think we're losing you a little. Are you calling from a landline or a cell phone? I think we're losing you, Richard.
We'll change it.
Richard, may I ask a question? Are you using a landline or a cell phone? Because we're losing you.
This is a landline.
Interesting. Normally it doesn't happen with a landline because you've been fading out quite a bit. I will keep trying. Pick up from there.
Yeah, no, it's been fine so far. I wonder what it is. Should we do some of this over?
No, we can keep on going with this.
We can keep on going. No, just the last few words, whatever you were saying, didn't come through. It was almost like somebody on a cell phone fading out.
Yeah. Are we coming through clearly now?
You're fine now, yes. Sorry about that, folks.
Good. But it may be when we talk over each other.
No, that it was actually while you were speaking and I was listening.
Oh, okay. All right. So should I pick up where I was?
Absolutely, please.
Okay. So, you know, we've been working very much the same for decades, including with technology. Why are we at a transition point? Well, a large part is for the change is an explosive increase in computer power. You know about Moore's Law, which states that computer power doubles every few years.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much like compound interest. At first, the accumulation of capital from interest seems small, but as it continues to compound over the years, the growth at the beginning reaches a point in time where it turns into enormous wealth. Well, we're now at a tipping point where the power of computer chips and sensors, internet broadband, and cloud storage will create a platform for an incredibly robust work technology in the next few years. And we talk about that in my book, Your Job and How Technology Will Change It.
I see that, yeah. And there are so many aspects to that as far as give us some of the different technologies you are referring to. I mean, I know there's going to be a lot more even emerging as we speak, but some of what's out there now.
Well, artificial intelligence. That is, the ability to use technology to basically almost collaborate with you in doing your job, being an assistant in terms of whatever you do. Up to this point, it's been pretty narrow. You know, basically you give it information and it kind of analyzes it. But we're at a point where it's going to start to, you know, almost be available in a very intelligent human way.
Mm-hmm.
So people who can use this almost using it like a partner, like a business partner, like an assistant, that's going to be an enormous advantage. And again, young people who already are very familiar with the digital world are well positioned to do that. Cyberspace research. In the near future, we will have an infinite amount of information available in cyberspace.
You also
the
feel...
ability...
Go ahead. Go ahead. I didn't want to interrupt you there, but I was going to make a point that you also feel that women will be more successful in this particular workplace, and I'm wondering what your translation of that is.
Well, that's right. For women, the skill set that's traditionally been their strength, the ability to adapt to changing work environments, teamwork, strong communication skills, those are essential aspects of the virtual business world. And those attributes that have traditionally hurt women in work, such as physical presence,
right,
you know, high voices, physical strength, they become irrelevant when you're working virtually. We're already seeing evidence of this. There's a study in the South of these middle-aged men who were supervisors and managers who were laid off, and they were unable to adapt to get new jobs in the more online virtual businesses, whereas the women seemed to thrive. In fact, their subordinates began doing better than they were. So virtual communications are going to kind of level the playing field, where what you look like, you know, your physical presence and so on, are really going to be irrelevant. And women, I think, are well-positioned to do well.
I can see that. I think that point's well made. You also mentioned that people over the age of 40 will be somewhat disadvantaged because they lack certain technical skills of younger people. You made that point a little earlier on. How about elaborating a little more on that?
Sure. Well, we're about to enter a new work world where flexible, adaptive attitudes and thinking are the core attributes for success as a worker. And we're seeing evaporation of those jobs that require the employee to show up every day and perform the same task over and over again, whether it's a blue-collar worker or a manager. These routine jobs are disappearing. These are the kind of jobs that, you know, middle-aged people do, and so many people say, I've been doing this forever, I know how to do this, I own this job, and there's no reason for me to change. But we're soon going to encounter a tipping point where all jobs will require the worker to collaborate mm-hmm. with new supercharged technology using social business virtual networks to communicate with colleagues and customers. So every worker is going to have to use adaptive thinking, and is going to have to be flexible and so on. People over the age of 40, it's not really what they've done. So my book, Your Job and How Technology Will Change It, is addressed in part to people in this age category, and it talks about what they can do to prepare themselves for this change, and offers a lot of detailed instruction and tips how they can succeed and survive as work changes.
If you don't mind, give us the contact information for people interested in your website, for example, and possibly just pursuing the book.
Yes, well, I've got a Twitter, pretty big Twitter following, so just look at my name up on Twitter, Richard Lieberman. There's also an author's Facebook page. And the book, Your Job and How Technology Will Change It, is available broadly. You can get it, you know, from your bookstore, or they'll order it. It's on Amazon, Kindle. It just popped up on the bestseller list on Kindle last night. Kindle, Amazon.
Congratulations.
So, thank you.
That's fantastic. Now, you were making a particular point about the advantage of Twitter. Can you go into that a little bit?
Well, yes. What we see now in terms of social networking, Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, those kinds of platforms are going to be adapted to the business world. And we're already seeing it in some of the high-tech jobs, but mm-hmm. we're going to see it across the board, where people are going to be connected in their business world environment 24/7. And the ability to be able to communicate in this way, the way people do in social networking, is going to be essential to be successful and productive as a business worker.
Almost like a good practice.
My book, Your Job and How Technology Will Change It, really talks about the kind of tools and learning and practice that you can engage in, that people can engage in to prepare themselves for this change.
And you also mentioned that the future, which is really in many cases already revealed itself on that level, but that people are going to have to resort to multiple skills as opposed to just one type of working skill.
Exactly. For most of us, we've had one core job skill our entire career. You know, the old saying, that's not in my job description, this is what I do. That's no longer going to work, because we're living longer, jobs are evolving, people will have to adapt and continually broaden their ability to work in a much more expansive way. And one way to do this, and again, I talk about this in my book, Your Job and How Technology Will Change It, involves skills in researching information from cyberspace. I mean, we are at a point where in the very near future, basically all knowledge. Every book, article, research paper ever written will be available instantaneously in cyberspace through research. But knowing how to access and process all this information, that will be a critical job tool in every job.
And I think I have no other way of connecting with you other than breaking in at some point. I'm also sensing that, you know, sorry, I lost my train of thought on that particular question.
Well, you know, we down here in North Carolina, we have what we call North Carolina Echo, which is a digital system. And all the museums and such are part of it. Any documents they have are supposed to be put into that, photographs of artifacts. And so you don't have to run a six-hour drive all the way out to Asheville to go see something. You can just call it up on the computer if you have the skills
essentially
to search for it.
It's about having the skills to search for.
And look at Google. I mean, everybody uses Google. I mean,
grab
anything on Google.
Back to you, Richard.
Well, that's exactly right. And think about what's available now. That's primitive.
Yes.
Compared to what we're going to see, very, very soon.
How soon do you sense this change?
Well, I think in the next few years, certainly the near future. And part of the proof of that is things that technology-wise that even a few years ago the experts said were decades off have now come to pass. For example, voice recognition technology. 3-4 years ago, most of the experts said we were a decade or two decades from really having effective voice recognition technology. Well, now you've got Siri on your iPhone, and technology is really fully developed. So things are just progressing in a exponential fashion now.
It kind of reminds me of some of the early original Star Trek episodes where Kirk is sitting in the thing fiddling with floppy disks. No, that's a long time gone.
Yeah. And at the time, nobody thought
that
technology would come.
It took two decades for the Star Trek technology to become real.
Yeah, exactly.
Now you visualize something or talk about something, and it's there 2 years later.
Yep.
Jules Verne would have had a fit.
Oh, he couldn't have kept up with it.
That's for sure. I'm going to read something here from the introduction that I think is very applicable to the conversation with you, Richard. Today, those who complain about technology-related changes in their work life are doing themselves an enormous disservice. They are simply finding an excuse to ignore what is occurring and failing to prepare for the fast-approaching new work world. This is from the book Your Job and How Technology Will Change It. We have Richard Lieberman on the line discussing his book. Back to you, Richard.
Well, that quote, I think many people who are complaining know that something's changing. I quote, you remember the 60s song, there's something happening here.
Oh, yeah.
What it here is ain't exactly clear.
Yep.
I think even the most negative, 60-year-olds who say, I hate technology, they know this is happening. Yeah. And so really it's a question, and that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, was to help folks understand it, understand what's occurring, make the case that it is happening, it's really happening, and help them get ready for it.
Make them realize the water levels are rising and you're going to have to jump in. You don't have a choice.
It's a good analogy.
Well, give us your contact information one more time. I think we're going to be bringing this interview to a wrap very shortly. And just so that people are familiar with your name, your book, and how they can contact you, and possibly your website.
Well, the book is Your Job and How Technology Will Change It. It's available bookstores, Amazon, Kindle. I've got a Twitter following under my name, Richard Lieberman. I post every day on this subject. And a Facebook, author's Facebook page, again, Richard Lieberman. And look forward to connecting with your listeners.
Absolutely. And we should have this show podcast within a couple of days. And we get a lot of attention on the World Wide Web. And I'm sure this is going to be a subject matter they're quite interested in. So thank you for your time, Richard.
Terrific. Thank you, Claudio.
Enjoyed it.
Okay, we are back here, and it's coming up on 10:30, so I need to remind you that you are listening to WCOM-FM, your community station here in Chapel Hill, Carrboro. Make sure you're on us all the time. And now let's going to cut to some music. I've got a piece here from 1956, not quite historic, but I think it's appropriate. We're going to listen to some Perry Como.
Dreamed anybody could kiss that away, bring me bliss that away. What a kiss that away, what a wonderful feeling to feel that away. Tell me, where have you been all my life? Oh, hot ziggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? It's so new to me. What you do to me, hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me when you're holding me tight? Never knew that my heart could go zing that away, ting-a-ling that away, make me sing that away. Said goodbye to my troubles, they went that away, ever since you came into my life. Oh, hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? It's so new to me. What you do to me, hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me when you're holding me tight? A cute little cottage for two that away. Skies are blue that away. Dreams come true that away. If you say I can share it with you that away, I'll be happy the rest of my life. Oh, hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? It's so new to me. What you do to me? Hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me when you're holding me tight? Oh, hot diggity dog. What you do to me from the moment you're mine?
Hot dog! McGruff the Crime Dog here. Let's hear from an identity thief.
Identities are easy to catch online. I send people an official-looking email pretending to be their bank or credit card company and ask them to confirm their personal information. Books them every time.
Safeguard your personal information on the phone, online, and especially at home, because half of identity theft occurs by someone you think you know. Keep your identity to yourself and take a bite out of crime. Learn more from the National Crime Prevention Council at ncpc.org.
A message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, and the National Crime Prevention Council.
Okay, that's a good one. We thought we'd throw that one in just for because we're talking about technology and identity theft, of course, is part of that. And now, let's go back to Claudio.
One more quick shout-out to Richard Lieberman. Thank you for joining us, if you're still listening, and those of you that are curious about his book, Your Job and How Technology Will Change It. I think it's vital to what's down the road for us. I'm going to quote from the introduction one more time. Today, those who complain about technology-related changes in their work life are doing themselves an enormous disservice. They are simply finding an excuse to ignore what is occurring and failing to prepare for that fast-approaching new work world, which is so, so true. I know I've had to make a lot of changes in my life, and God knows I've still got a long way to go as far as understanding computers and really, really, you know, appreciating and feeling natural with the technology. But I tell you what, it is fascinating.
But he is learning fast, folks. Don't worry. He's learning.
Yeah, I'll get there one of these days. I want to dedicate a little something to the 4th of July, something my friend here, Bob Crowley, actually put together, which I think is a pretty profound and well-observed statement regarding that time of year. Concerning the American Independence Day, the date each year that we have celebrated the signing of the Declaration of Independence, now 238 years ago, I ask you to think about that for a moment. This was not, as I have heard some say, the day the USA became an independent country. Gaining that precious independence from Great Britain would not come for another decade, filled with war, death, ambivalence, ego, dissonance, jealousy, glory, pride, lies, and the best and worst of all human cruelty and charity. Independence did not come just for the asking. Independence did not mean freedom. That came only from the provisions of the U.S. Constitution, and even that came with political fights and posturing. For some of our citizens, the level of freedom enjoyed by most Americans would not come for almost a further century, and some still await their turn at that part of the elusive American dream. Please think of these things and all other hopes and dreams of our founding fathers as you celebrate this day. Shoot the fireworks, for this custom echoes back to John Adams' call for the day to be celebrated in that manner. Host the barbecue, for overeating is an honored custom to go with any celebration. Boy, can it hurt sometimes. Unfurl the flag, for that is the best touchstone we have to our shared national identity. However, as you do all that, remember how we have come to being able to celebrate such a day as this, and the continuing struggle to hold on to our independence and our freedoms, as some even now seek to limit or deny them. We mean our own political parties in this scrubble. It is truly said, freedom is not free. That is the one thing to remember. Freedom is not free. Happy birthday to the United States of America. May we and our issue see through this and many more of these days far into the future. Best regards from Bob Crowley.
I write pretty sometimes.
What drove you to making this statement? I get these feelings on Halloween, and I'll write something to sort of literary, you know, create some literary inspiration for that. But I haven't really been led to write anything about the 4th of July yet.
My own feeling on this is that I write something like this, maybe not these words, but appropriate for each holiday that passes. You probably see more of them as we go along.
You're talking about Facebook and Twitter?
Well, Facebook and like this one I mailed out to probably 200 of my friends just to kind of give them some greetings for the day.
And I'm one of them that typed this up for me so I can read it on my show.
Yep. Absolutely. So I'll do that. And as far as the Independence Day goes, I've always felt a kind of a deep feeling in that, because that was when we put together all the hopes and dreams that eventually became what you have here in this country. And sometimes we don't always see it, and a lot of times we ignore it, and there are some people who would take it away from us.
And our very own politicians are among those ranks.
Yeah, there are a bunch of them, and they don't sit on just one side of the aisle. They sit on both. There seems to be sometimes a preponderance on one side rather than the other, but there are on both sides. There are people that would take all of this away, and it's important for us to reflect on it, to consider it, and to remember that this is something that we have to struggle for continually.
If we send our soldiers abroad to fight for it, then we need to fight for their rights when they come back home.
Absolutely.
We need to make sure that it's not taken away from
us. That's exactly where we're going with this. So that's why I wrote it. And let's see, next one will probably be Labor Day, and I'll probably have something for that.
Well, let's go to something musical for a moment, and then we'll continue in somewhat of a local political
something
vein.
Musical.
Give me a choice here.
I've got left here, really, is that Joe Slater organ piece.
Oh, we've got others. We just didn't write them down. But
okay. Let me.
Why don't you go to something and give us a little narrative on what it is, so that the audience will know what they're listening to. I really enjoy these historical archives.
You want to try Caruso?
Why not?
Okay, this is an interesting piece. It was recorded in 1918. It's the song Over There, but it was recorded by, of all people, Enrico Caruso, the great tenor. And a worse Italian accent I've never heard. And I apologize to all the Italians listening, but you'll hear what I mean
this
in a moment.
This is the Italian accent in our language. In Italian, it sounds beautiful.
Oh, yeah, and he actually sings the song in Italian as well as English.
Why not delay, go today? winding over, and we won't come back till he's over, over there.
Okay, well, everybody, that's Enrico Caruso, which is a kind of an interesting one to have doing that particular song.
And that was your moment of opera for the day.
That was our moment of opera for the day here, and he sounds pretty good.
He sounded so much better in Italian.
Oh, sure. But, you were talking a few minutes ago, Claudio, about how, about freedoms and all like that, and we've had a little bit of an incident here in North Carolina that we need to make everybody aware.
I wanted to go a little homegrown this morning.
Yeah, there was a Democratic convention, the North Carolina Democratic Party convention, and they have felt the need to pass a resolution that I think you want to read.
And here we go. Resolution in support of Moral Monday passed at the state Democratic convention on June 7th, 2014. Whereas the Republican-led majority in North Carolina General Assembly has enacted laws that would significantly suppress access to the ballot box for thousands of North Carolina citizens. Whereas the North Carolina General Assembly has cut unemployment benefits for 170,000 workers. Whereas the Republican-led North Carolina General Assembly refused to accept federally provided Medicaid expansion benefits that would provide needed health care to over 500,000 North Carolinians. Whereas the North Carolina General Assembly has cut financial resources for public education in order to provide vouchers to private schools. Whereas the North Carolina General Assembly has enacted laws that reduced environmental regulations. Whereas these concerns, fears, and uncertainties have drawn together tens of thousands of justice-loving individuals from across North Carolina to voice their dissatisfaction with the regressive and extremist policies enacted by the North Carolina General Assembly in what has become known as Moral Monday protests. And whereas these Moral Monday rallies have taken the high ground and are rooted in values of nonviolence, love, and concern for all citizens of North Carolina in an effort to promote equality, fairness, and justice. Therefore, be it resolved, the North Carolina Democratic Party adopts this resolution to support and promote the concept and principles of Moral Monday rallies and the progressive values these rallies stand for. That is part of what we were talking about fighting for our freedoms back home while our soldiers are getting killed abroad.
Yeah, and there's actually something in there I think it'd be near and dear to your heart, and that's the relaxation of environmental regulations.
Yes, that's very bothersome. As a matter of fact, speaking of that, at the time when North Carolina is probably one of the most visited and has become a place of, I think, more people moving here, than has happened in generations in this country, and now we decide to bring in fracking to pollute our water and to pollute our air. How does any of this make sense? Is everything belonging to the oil companies all of a sudden?
It would seem so. I mean, it certainly would seem so. Fracking, there are arguments that can be made both ways, but in general, it seems like a bad idea. The idea for doing it is we'll get more oil, and that will make us energy independent. Well, there are other ways to get energy independent without polluting the water table.
If we don't start going green, we're going to get a big bang from Mother Nature.
Absolutely, and this is these are big bangs that are going to go off underground. And the locations are kind of interesting. If you happen to live in the city of Durham, do you know you're on top of an area that could be? Actually, here at WCOM, we're probably within a mile or so. The town of Apex, where I live, that's entirely on top of a potential fracking zone.
Too close to where I live, too.
Pittsburgh, there's another one. That they're on top of that.
And so they're thinking about bringing, what, over 60,000 people, yep, to expand Pittsburgh, sort of the new RTP, and at the same time they want to bring this disaster of pollution into the arena. Let's have all these people here, and then let's foul up the water and let's foul up the air.
Yeah, and you know, if it would make sense if fracking would increase the amount of oil, would make us energy independent, and that would bring down the price at the pump.
The price is not established in this country. The price is established internationally. So
yes,
No matter what we dig up here, we're going to pay the same as everybody else. So don't let anybody fool you. We're not getting any benefits.
I fully understand that. And that was exactly my point, that we're not going to. So.
Oh, I wasn't singing song to you. I was singing that song in general.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is not the greatest idea in the world.
It just amazes me that this is even possible in this beautiful natural area known as North Carolina.
Yeah. Well,
and you know, it's another thing I'd like to mention very quickly, and I'm not taking this from a Democratic or Republican view. I am independent myself. I wouldn't give you a nickel for either party, but it occurs to me that, you know, they've had so many earthquakes and certain disasters like sinkholes and so on happening in areas where fracking is taking place, but yet still the industry denies that this has anything to do with them. However, when you look at the pattern of where these things are evolving and where they're happening, it is where fracking is going on. So, you know, put two and two together.
Yeah, that's very definitely a case. You know, this area is geologically active. We'd like to pretend it isn't, but, you know, the Uwari Mountains are where most of this is centered. The Uwaris are actually the oldest mountain range in North America, only they're buried under what we call the North Carolina sandhills. But they're down there, and that's where the oil congregates, so it's a good spot. But is that the right way to go after it? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but probably isn't, because it doesn't sound like this. It's more just, as you say, it makes the oil companies richer. And that reminds me of a...
And while they're still getting essentially welfare from our tax base, they're operating on subsidies, so there's no way they can lose. You and I are going to be the ones to lose.
Yep.
They're still getting federal subsidies, while they are the very voices that say welfare should be taken away from the average person who needs it.
Exactly. It reminds me of a quote that I particularly like from, of all people, Bat Masterson. Everybody knows Bat Masterson, the
cowboy.
The cowboy gunslinger. Well, most people don't realize that when he turned to about 40 and decided he couldn't draw quite as fast as he could before, he moved to New York City, and he actually was, for a time, collector of customs, but he found out, eventually got a job at a New York City newspaper as a sports writer and a columnist, and he would write his regular column. He'd go to sports events and write about those, and in one of his columns, he made the observation that people tend to say that everything evens out. The rich man gets ice in the summer. The poor man gets ice in the winter. But somehow, I never saw it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the spoonful of vinegar we're being fed, that's for
absolutely,
sure.
Absolutely.
Now, you had something else here that you laid in front of me. The House GOP Majority Leader, Stam, makes
Paul
an outdated and offensive argument. What was that all about?
Well, Paul, there was a resolution on discrimination put out. It was put out by Democratic Representative Susan Fisher of Asheville, and the idea was to eliminate an oversight in the law that did not provide for discrimination based on sexual orientation and some other things that were not in the charter schools law. And Paul, I know Paul personally. He's a very nice guy. But when he got up there and started talking about how, well, that's a life choice, when the American Psychiatric Association has re-categorized such acts as disorders, it's just unconscionable that anyone would be able to get up and say something like that in open legislature. So it's something that, well, I'm going to have a chat with them at some point, but we'll see what else happens. And the Democratic Party leader, Randy Voller, had put out a major statement about that he was not happy with the way Paul was acting.
Just to let you folks know, we're bringing this political perspective purely as a result of dedicating some language and observations to the 4th of July, which was not a radio show day for us, but just wanted to bring some perspective on how we need to stay alert and be astute about our personal freedoms and otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Especially more and more our environment.
Absolutely. And the freedoms are ours, but only if we are militant about it.
Only if we keep them, exactly. Yeah. And that's entirely up to us.
Yeah. Can I go off on the Apex Arts Council a little bit here?
Absolutely. I was hoping we'd find a segue, so you found it.
Yeah, I just found it by saying it.
I think that's how it works, mate.
Yeah. Well, the thing I want to talk about is that last time I was on here, we said that we would have a large announcement fairly soon, and now we're prepared to make it. The Apex Arts Council now has, as part of its repertoire, the Apex Community Theater. It is not a building. This is a theater group. This is a number of people who will be producing theatrical shows for us. And anybody is welcome to come and audition and perhaps be part of it. If you check our website, www.apexartscouncil.org, you'll be able to see any of those that come up. Their first performance is actually going to happen very soon. We have performances on the 7th, 8th, and 9th of August, and that will be at the brand new Apex Nature Park on Evans Road. And there's an amphitheater there, and we will be doing it. It is an original production. It's called Rob N. Hood. It is a musical based on the Robin Hood legend, and it is absolutely free. This is our way of introducing it to the public that we're there. So if you're interested, go to the website, check it out, come on out to the performance, meet us, and see what's going on. But we are there. We will be producing things under the name of London Salt Productions.
London Salt.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what that means, but it's it's there.
It's catchy.
Yeah, and we're hoping to have the producer, who's our vice president of theatrical arts. How's that for a title? At the Apex Arts Council, we're going to have him on the show here in a week or two.
And his name is Pepper.
Pepper Jensen.
Pepper Jensen.
Yeah, and he's.
He could have called the company Pepper's Ghost.
Well, he thought Salt and Pepper, and then his girlfriend, soon to be wife, her name is Paris, so it's. Salt and Pepper, Paris and London. It kind of
London Paris.
Yeah,
I got you.
Yeah.
And of course, the Apex Arts Council also brings you Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater.
Absolutely.
As does the Historic Carolina Theater of Durham.
Yes. And we're very happy to be partnered with the Historic Carolina Theater.
Absolutely.
I wonder if I get a discount if I rent it.
We can probably work something out over there. We'll talk to the top guys.
Okay, sounds good to me.
Why don't we go to some more music? Give us another archive, and then we'll kick back into something.
Let's see here. Well, I've got one that's kind of interesting because we've only got a couple minutes left here. This
that's
one's
right,
going
to
run about 2.5 minutes. And you recall a group called the Harmonicats?
That does sound familiar, although I'm thinking of a cartoon.
No, the Harmonicats were actually an orchestra, not a big orchestra. I mean, they had five people there. And everything you hear, no matter what it sounds like, is done on the harmonica. And they did the Minute Waltz. And strangely enough, it lasts for 2.5 minutes. But we'll see what happens here. Thank you. Okay.
A much earlier recording. That was pretty amazing for the fact that it was just harmonica.
Just harmonicas, which was recorded in 1950.
Well, I want to thank you folks for tuning us in. This is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater. Coming up next will be Say Yes to the Chef. They're coming right up. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you back on the radio next week. Bob Crowley, thank you for your assistance.
And thank you for having me here.
It's been a great time. This is the Speakeasy signing off. Until next time, cheers.